Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dana O'Neill from The Athletic in a moment. First, our play-by-play call of the day. Gold for the United States.
And it'll be Jocelyn Lamoureux, who's had the hot hand in the tournament. Lamoureux to give Team USA the advantage. First shooter in round six. Lamoureux swiveling, right shot between the circles, fakes, shoots, scores! Jocelyn Lamoureux! And now it's on 20-year-old Matty Rooney.
Here we go. If Augusta doesn't score for Canada, it's over.
Augusta picking it up, crossing the blue line, left wing shot, curling to her right, pulling it to the slot, fake, shoots, save Matty Rooney! Gold medal, USA! USA wins the gold!
Call last night, courtesy of Westwood One, as the United States, for the first time since 98, wins the women's gold. See, every time I hear something like that, it takes me back to Sochi in 14. There's a big snowstorm here, and Dick Girardi needed to rent a car. So he says, hey, can you pick me up at the hotel? He can take me over to the rent-a-car place. I say, oh, yeah, sure, fine. So I've got the Olympic game on between the Russians and the United States. And so it's in the shootout. And Dick and I are driving over, and in the Olympics, you don't have to change shooters. You can go with the same one. So TJ Oshie goes in, he shoots, he scores. And I don't remember what the Russians do, whatever. Oshie goes in, shoots, and scores. And Dick says, put in Kane. Right? And Oshie gets the puck. Oshie goes in, shoots, and scores. He goes, put in Kane. Right? Oshie goes in, shoots, and scores. He goes, put in Patrick Kane. I looked over, I said, what is your fascination with Patrick Kane? He goes, he's the only guy I know. All right, let's bring in Dana O'Neill from The Athletic, and she knows that story's true.
I surely do.
You do.
Absolutely.
It's great to hear you, Dana. Can I start with the Louisville thing? I mean, you've done a lot of work following that over time. The appeal was denied, and they'll let, you know, the banners are down, the wins have been stripped. In the end, how effective are taking away wins, banners, and things like that, in your opinion?
You know, I waffle on that. I understand what people always like to say, like, well, I saw the game happen, and I saw all of that. I get that to an extent. But I also do believe that there is a serious embarrassment involved with it. I mean, I was there when Memphis was at the Final Four in 2008, and I remember it, and it occurred, so I didn't, it's not like they weren't there. I understand all of that. But the major embarrassment of it all, the stain of it all, the punishment just basically tells, you know, I think it does tell people this was sort of beyond unacceptable. This was horrible and heinous, and they needed to be punished. And, you know, you realize they did that on top of everything else, on top of the postseason ban that Louisville already had put on itself and other things. So I think it comes with a sting, especially at a place like Louisville where there's such pride in the program and in the history of the program, and let's face it, such a rivalry with a school down the street that hasn't taken its banner down. So that also, I think, factors in Louisville.
Yeah, there's no question about that, because I remember Dick ran into Rick Pitino one time at Churchill Downs, and he was wearing this bright red jacket, and he said, why are you wearing that? He says, it's just to make the Kentucky people mad.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes it's really that simple. How close have you tried to follow the FBI case or cases? And if so, what kind of road is everybody going down right now?
Well, I've certainly paid a lot of attention to it. I can't say that, you know, I know it very well. I mean, I thought Pete Thamel at Yahoo Sports had a pretty enlightening story this past week, talking about the number of players and coaches that could be implicated in this thing, and not necessarily in what the FBI has already laid bare back in September, but in the ensuing investigations of Andy Miller, a big agent in college basketball, of his files and where that could lead. you know, I guess my two questions are, how long is this going to take? Because, you know, neither the wheels of justice nor the wheels of the NCAA move terribly quickly. So how quickly will it be before we actually can see people's names and things like that, and how they've been implicated? Because that's going to be a big deal. I mean, are we just going to simply vacate the 2017-2018 season in 10 years? Are we going to know something before that? But I think there are probably a lot of nervous people in college basketball right now, or at least they very well should be. Andy Miller is a big name in college basketball and always has been. And if there's information in any of those documents, it could be very damning to people. I don't doubt that for a heartbeat. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, at some point, I don't know when, things will change.
And again, when you're talking about Andy Miller, just so everyone understands, it's not that Andy Miller is implicated by the FBI.
Right.
It's that he what happened, that if there's certain information in Andy Miller's documents or in his computer somewhere, it would then lead to NCAA violations and not
correct
federal law violations.
It could, I mean, it could. Who knows? I mean, I the FBI certainly could go back in if the same
right
sort of
yeah
thing has gone in. But yeah, I think the NCAA implications in this are I think it's, I've always said that the potential NCAA violations, some of them are almost, not bigger isn't the right word, but more impactful. I can't fathom that anyone is still going to go to jail for this. I mean, I can't see a guy like, what are you in for, paying a basketball player? I mean, that's really going to happen? Like, that's going to happen? I don't think so.
Right.
But the NCAA is basically going to be given everything that they've ever wanted that they can't get because they don't have subpoena power. They're going to have wiretaps and documents and all sorts of things that they've never been able to get their hands on. And I have visions of them just like, you know, mad professors sitting in their offices waiting to get their hands on all of this, because then you've got NCAA violation on top of NCAA violation on top of NCAA violation, and then it's going to get really interesting.
All right. As for this particular season, you know, seasons are marathons. So there are moments where teams with one and dones look great. There are moments where older teams look great. And then we don't know how it's going to shake down. So in this marathon season, where are we right now?
I think we are in what I call the doldrums of mid-February. Like, March is so close. Like, oh my God, we're almost there. We're almost there. But we have to slog through these last couple of weeks. So I think what we've seen the last 2 weeks is just a couple of teams not hitting the wall, but just sort of like, oh my God, is the regular season over yet? And so they're losing games that we sort of would not expect them to lose. But I don't think that they're necessarily indicative of the type of team that they are. I believe eventually the cream tends to rise, more or less. You know, and I also believe in experience. I do think that no matter how good these young players are, experience has proven to be the most important factor come March. So, you know, I think teams like Duke and Kentucky might get themselves in a better position that they've been more consistently or whatever, but I still trust teams like Villanova more. I just do.
And justifiably so. They've proven it on the big stage as
sure
to what they can do. Villanova and the Big East will go second in Madison Square Garden. The Big Ten
yep
gets there first, and they had to compress the schedule to get there, but they're going to get there first. How intrigued are you by the reception that the Big Ten gets in the Garden, since this is the first time through? Because when Penn State played Michigan in there in, what, 13 or whatever it was, the attendance was great. When Ohio State played Minnesota there this time, the attendance was no better than mediocre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been questioning that decision all along since Jim Delaney made it. To me, to reconfigure your entire basketball season and then roll the dice as to what impact it has for the teams when they get into the NCAA tournament, you don't know what that week off is going to do for them. I think it's a really big risk, and I'm not sure what the reward is. I mean, I guess theoretically, people will flock to the Garden to watch Big Ten basketball, but, you know, if you're a Michigan or a Michigan State fan and you don't happen to live around here, aren't you going to save your money for when they go into the NCAA tournament as opposed to, like, spending a lot of it? As you know, it costs a lot to go to New York.
Yeah.
To go there for a few days. And look at the teams that are at the top, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Purdue. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work. And, you know, and anybody who thinks Rutgers and Maryland is bringing anybody this season has not been paying a lick of attention. You know, just stop. So I don't know what to expect. I'm going to be there, and I'm as curious as anybody to see how full the place is. I think the Big East has done a pretty admirable job of keeping the interest in the Garden. But even that, since, you know, went from the 16-team behemoth to what it is now, I'll say they haven't struggled, but it's not the same. It's just not. So I just don't know. I don't know what to expect. I think it's going to be really weird. Plus, it's just early. I mean, I'm not ready for March Madness because, you know why? It's starting on February 28th. It's not March.
Yeah, exactly.
Are people even going to turn their brains on the room to know that this is happening? I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, there's going to be two teams eliminated from, you know, quote, March Madness on February 28th. That's bizarre.
Well, the first thing I thought of when they told us about this a couple of years ago, you're telling me the Big Ten is starting its tournament the same time as the Summit?
Right, exactly. This is supposed to be the week that we pay attention to all the little conferences and have fun with the you know, the one bid leagues, and everyone loves that. Everyone loves watching that stuff. Nobody wants to watch, like, okay, Michigan's getting in anyway, so what's the big deal? Like, we're not ready for that.
Obviously, no new ground I would expect to be broken in any kind of press conference. But how interesting is it that in New York, Tom Izzo is going to have to go before the media there?
Yeah, I mean, look, this has been the question that has been dogging him since this whole thing broke with the entire investigations out there. That it, from essentially starting whenever their first game is, I guess it's Friday the 2nd, from that day until they lose in the NCAA tournament, they are going to hear these questions over and over and over again. And they can try to say basketball questions only. They can try to say whatever they want, but they're going to get hit with the New York media first and then the national media for up to 3 weeks. And it's not going to go away. And I understand, I'm not really sure what Izzo could say under the circumstances. I understand the sort of situation he finds himself in, and I'm sure there's a lot of lawyers in his ears telling him what he can and can't say. I'm always a big believer is to try to find, if you can't do it in front of a group session, to try to find one person, five beat writers, whatever it is, and answer as many of the questions as you can once and get it out there, and then that might cease the repetitive questions. But by saying nothing, they're just begging the questions to keep coming and coming and coming, and it's going to be, you know, Michigan State, comma, under investigation. It's just that's the way it's going to be, whether they like it or not. It's just the reality.
Obviously, we know what you know, what kind of road Penn State has, especially after the Michigan game. But as a Penn State grad, what have you thought watching how it's played out this season for Penn State?
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, you know, I watch them now, and like, I think this looks like a Big Ten basketball team that has a chance, right? I mean, I know that they went through some lumps early, and they lost some games that they shouldn't have, but I feel like this is one of those teams that is coming together. Like, you always look for a team that's like, all right, who knows what they're doing now, as opposed to who looked really good back in November. I think Penn State has a chance to really put some things together. You know, obviously, I don't know if they've had Patrick say anything about Watkins' knee injury or not, but obviously that's impactful. So, you know, where that all lands is going to be important going forward. But I don't know how you can't watch this team and not see the progress that they've made, certainly in the last few weeks, and how hard they're playing and how dangerous they can be. And I think that's the kind of team that next week, you know, could make some noise. And let's face it, if Penn State does start to get some traction in New York, one fan base that can get a lot of people in the Garden is Penn State, and they probably would show up. So that's the sort of team that they could ride a wave and figure things out here. But it's going to be uncomfortable, unfortunately, until Selection Sunday.
No question.
Yeah.
Dana, always a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you in the Garden next week.
You bet. Anytime, Steve. Thank you.
The great Dana O'Neill from The Athletic. We will come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So college basketball is the only moneymaker for the NCAA. And so, and you look at this tournament. See, the problem is that when you look at the NCAA tournament, for example, and you see how they handled the North Carolina thing, that brings with it a scrutiny to it as to why certain things are handled in certain ways. They bring it upon themselves. They don't make any secret of it. And now you look at, you're going to have a tournament coming. Now, anything that happens with the FBI case is not going to come out before this year's tournament. I mean, don't fool yourself. These things take a lot of time. And it's not just going to be blurted out, and they're just not going to hand a document to the NCAA and say, hey, go to town and enjoy yourselves. That's not what's going to happen either. They're going to have to find out through pretrial filings, pretrial motions, and things like that. But the NCAA is going to have to keep a long, long, hard look at what's going on. Now, how they want to handle it, I don't know. There are a lot of people who are not satisfied with how they handled North Carolina. I mean, when you got Rashad McCants saying he made the dean's list and doesn't recall going to class, that's not good. And takes, you know, and you see how long it, as Dana mentioned, you know, I mean, who knows how long it takes for them to look at it. Because, you know, with their resources and so forth, it feels like it takes them forever. For them to come to conclusions. But my recommendation would be this. If they find out that, I don't know, let's pick 20 schools, are in trouble, just go for it, get it over with, get it done. They'll be off probation sooner rather than later. You know, prolonging it just prolongs it. That's all it does. It's one thing, Paul, and I mentioned this a few times about Paul Tagliabue. Paul Tagliabue had this feeling that, look, get it out there, let it run its course quickly, get rid of it, move on. People will forget about it. Yeah. I mean, it's like the suit always says in the staff meeting, ignore the problem, it'll go away. No, it's not. It doesn't work. I mean, to me, get to it. Get rid of it. Right? Some people pay the price, whatever, go on probation, they do. But
it's like when you have a Band-Aid on, you know, when it's healed, you know, you just gotta rip it off and move on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's what Paul Tagliabue would do. He'd just minimize the damage. Like, here, get it out there, get rid of it, go, keep going. You know? Don't prolong it, drag it, prolong it, and all it does is it stays in the news cycle the entire time. I mean, the NFL made a massive public relations mistake with the Deflategate thing. I mean, it stayed in the news for 18 months.
It is amazing, though, how much that Paul Tagliabue has completely stayed out. You have not seen or heard of Tagliabue since Roger Goodell took over. I mean,
what?
I just wonder how many sources and media people have contacted him for interviews. Oh, what are your thoughts on Deflategate? Oh, what were your thoughts on the Ray Rice? What are your thoughts on the current state of the league?
He stays out of it.
He sure does, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's one thing between, like, among presidents, the first George Bush, second, and George W. Bush. You don't hear them commenting too much about what's going on. They kind of stay out of it. Let the whomever's in charge do their deal. Well, same thing with what he's done. But, you know, now we'll see what they want to do with it moving forward. Penn State, of course, lost to Michigan last night. You know, it's like almost in some ways, the one thing you do get the concern is like there's a a Purdue effect in basketball like there is a Wisconsin effect in football. You know, the team that plays Wisconsin the week before, you know, they may win the game, but they beat you up. They beat you up. That's why when you look at the schedule and go, ah, they're playing Wisconsin the week before they play us. All right. Purdue, the same thing. They kind of beat you up a little bit. Penn State, like, looked like they were dragging a piano around most of the night because they're a team that's much better athletes, quicker, more athletic. And then Mike Watkins got hurt so early in the game. And we're still waiting to hear what the MRI results are.
I'll give him a ton of credit, though, trying to come back out and give it another shot.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that.
No, Mike wants to play, but we'll see what the MRI says about that. Tony Carr also played last night with a lot of chest congestion. I never mentioned it in the pregame or in the game last night. Because, I mean, I was a shoot-around. I could tell. He had a long talk with Saz about chest congestion afterward, which a lot of people have had. Just when you're playing basketball, that's not easy. So on to Nebraska. I think we leave tonight, right?
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In an Olympics that has at times lacked its excitement, and at times has lacked stars, it brings us back 38 years ago today to Lake Placid, New York. In the semifinal, the United States and the Big Red Menace, I mean the Soviet Union. Did I say that? Al Michaels, Ken Dryden.
Losing it to Silk. Now Petrov controls. Back to Harlamov. Skating in on the left side. Into the American end, 55 seconds, but Mikhailov has the puck. Mikhailov sweeping in, out in front, backhander goes wide. I think Krejci might have got just a piece of it. Mikhailov, back out to Vilya Ledyanov. 43 seconds remaining. Morrow, checked into the boards, it comes back to center ice. 38, 37 seconds left in the game. Petrov with it, the Americans on top, 4-3. Long shot, Craig able to get a piece of it to sweep it away. 28 seconds. The crowd going insane. Harlamov shooting it into the American end again. Morrow is back there. Now Johnson, 19 seconds. Johnson over to Ramsey. Vilya Ledyanov gets checked by Ramsey. McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Silk. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Unbelievable.
necessary, just pictures. Teams congratulating each other after the game. The crowd's still roaring. Look at
greatest sports upset ever. That was 38 years ago today. I mean, look, they were as professional gets. And to let you know how dominant they were, because they were beating NHL teams. They were beating NHL All-Star teams. I mean, 8 years earlier, the Summit Series between the U.S. and, excuse me, between the Soviets and Canada. I mean, the great Canadian professionals. Now, they didn't have Bobby Hull, and they didn't have Bobby Orr. Orr was hurt. Hull had gone to the WHA, so there was a little, you know. So they didn't have two of the best in Canada at the time, but, oh, they surely had enough to beat the Soviets. And in an eight-game series, the Canadians, Team Canada, finally won. Paul Henderson scored the game-winning goal. Phil Esposito had a great Summit Series. But in Canada, Canada won scored the first two goals, led 2-0, and they got blown out. Then I want to say they tied. I think no. The Canadians may have won the second game. Then they tied. Then they, or something like that. Then they went to Vancouver, and the Canadians got blown out. And the Canadians on their home ice got booed off the ice. Booed off the ice. And then they went to Moscow, played four games there. And I think the Canadians, I want to say, won 3 out of 4. And they won the series 4-3-1. So now they get to this, and these kids win, beat them. I mean, remember, these kids were blown out, 10-3 in Madison Square Garden 2 weeks earlier by the same team. Blown out. I mean, I'm talking non-competitive. And how dominant were the Soviets? What didn't they do in the last 2 minutes of the game, the Soviets? What didn't they do? They never pulled the goalie. Why? They never had to do it before. You don't do things you're not... I mean, remember how emotional the people were in Philadelphia, in 76, whatever it was, when the Flyers rocked them all over the ice and the Soviets left? Then, you know how they got them back, right? They told them they were not going to be getting their money. Yes. Even Karl Marx has a price. All right? And so they went back out there. That kind of deal. That tells you everything when you hear that story. Like, yeah, you're not going to get any money. Your federation's not getting any money. All right, everybody get back out there. Oh, wait a minute. I thought you guys didn't care about money. So they went back out and played. Well, you see this, you saw this happen. The Soviet Union had invaded Afghanistan at that point. The Cold War was about as frigid gets. The Berlin Wall was still up. I mean, the times also dictated it. And plus, the United States was not going through a particularly great time. Long, long gas lines. President Carter had made the Malaise speech. I mean, there are all sorts of things that were surrounding this, which didn't exactly have the country with any kind of swagger at that time. And then these guys came up, and you're like, hey, everybody a little swagger the next day. Pretty good. Pirates got Corey Dickerson today from the Rays. Yeah, he picked up an all-star. Hit 282 last year, 27 homers, 33 doubles, knocked in 62. Guys hit over 50 home runs the last 2 years. He gave up Daniel Hudson. Remember, Hudson had been a starter earlier in his career with the White Sox and the D-backs. then later was transitioning into the bullpen with the D-backs and the Pirates. He did all bullpen work with them last year. 4.5 ERA. He also gave up Tristan Gray. I saw Tristan Gray play for West Virginia this year. He was the I want to say he was the 13th round pick out of Rice. I liked him. He looked like a good prospect. But, you know, he's a New York Penn League guy. It's years away from getting there. So Dickerson's a left-handed bat. He'll play probably left field. Marte will go to center, Polanco in right. And this is the perfect kind of deal for the Pirates because the Rays have to pay $1 million of his $5.9 million salary. Perfect. So the Pirates actually picked up a legit bat today. Not only that, a legit left-handed bat to take advantage of the porch and right field at PNC Park. Very nice. Very, very nice. I think it was a good pickup for them. So the Pirates made a deal today. And then, of course, the United States women's hockey team, what a great win for that. I'm going to have to watch the highlights tonight. I watched the first two periods last night. They were down 2-1. But I had to go to sleep. And, you know, I mean, because I had a game last night. I worked all day. I had to go to sleep. It was already, I don't know, 12:30 in the morning. I'm done. But what a, you know, that's their first gold medal since 1998. That's just a great moment for them. They won in the shootout. Matty Rooney stopped that last shot. She's a hero. I mean, hopefully they could show more of that tonight because obviously on the East Coast, I mean, the odds of people seeing it were very slim. The United States is now fourth in medals in the games. Norway, 35, 13 gold. Germany, 25, 13 gold. Canada, 24, 9 gold. USA, 21, 8 gold. So there you go. Let's see. Ah, Liechtenstein is a bronze. There you go. Latvia has that one bronze in... it was bobsled, right?
Yeah, I believe it was one of their... They had like two teams in the two-man bobsled. Yeah.
And now, did the suits stay up and watch the women's hockey game last night?
Good question. He looked pretty chipper this morning. I know one of the girls out in the front office who loves hockey.
Well, Sammy did. I know Sammy did. Watched all of it.
Yep, Sammy and her brother did.
Yeah, but that's fine. That's fine. I just was wondering... If the suit stayed up, I mean, his world is a DVR world.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's all DVR.
Yeah. Well, they got bad news for him. Okay, the United States won 3-2 in a shootout. Shootout. I feel like I ruined it for him.
Well, just not like it just happened an hour ago. I think we're past the statute of limitations to report it.
Well, it's like yesterday with the bobsledding thing. I thought everybody knew that the United States got silver. They're like, oh, you wrecked it for me. I thought, wait, wrecked what? It took place like 10 hours ago. And
But you're right. Hopefully they'll find a place to replay the gold medal game. I think there was at least twice they replayed the U.S. Czech Republic game.
Yeah. Well, I would think on NBC Prime. I mean, they'll probably bring them in the studio tonight. Did you hear him talk about the studio yesterday?
Yeah, I caught that on the podcast. By the way, you can do the same. Subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast. I'm like, where are you going with this? I mean, I think we would be kind of floored as the amount of money that NBC and these networks, you know, put in to build these studios that they only use for a few weeks. But you're right. What's the amount of time Mike Tirico stands in front of the green screen?
I'm sitting here yesterday, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, I got to leave for a game here pretty soon. I just sat here and let him talk. But boy, he loves that set. Woo!
Digging the set.
Okay, there's a fireplace and a couch. Okay, I have a fireplace and a couch too. What the? No, we don't webcast it. Oh well.
Maybe someday, you never know.
No,
it could be brought up in a digital media brainstorm.
Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do though.
Draw the line.
What? Okay. There's going to be a point next winter where we hit a really bad cold snap. And I'm going to take the remote gear out. And I'm going to park right in front of that wood stove during when it's 8 below zero and with my feet up and do the show with a headset on.
Nice.
That I am going to do.
Fireside chat.
Now, this 9 o'clock thing, you want to know what bothers me about the 9 o'clock leaving on Saturday morning? I just found out this morning. That, and it's not a good circumstance, but my daughter-in-law's grandmother, who's a sweet woman, passed away, and the funeral is in Johnstown Saturday. So the quickest way for them to get here is to leave Friday from work, stop here Friday night, stay here in the morning, and then go down to the funeral. Well, of course, that means the little guy's with them. You know how I feel about that. So I will be up late and waiting for them on Friday night because obviously I'm going to have to leave at 8 o'clock in the morning to get out to the airport. That was the only part I looked at and went, oh, really? Of all the times? Timing just not quite off. But I do have to make one stop tomorrow at Trader Joe's. You know why? You may be only a year and a half, but little Ryan, now, you know, some kids like Cheerios. Right? But they feed him Joe's O's. So, every time he comes here, I go to Trader Joe's and I buy him a big box of Joe's O's. It's a cheap way to get out looking good, okay? We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Hey, by the way, the Blue-White game in Beaver Stadium on April 21st will start at 3 o'clock. They made that announcement today. And the game will be broadcast live, by the way, on BTN. That's just where the progress of the program happens to be. So it's been exciting times around here between, obviously, the way football's brought itself back to the point where it is now. We've had a women's soccer championship in there. You know what women's volleyball does all the time. The greatness of the wrestling program. And now you get the men's basketball team. I know last night didn't go well, but you know they've drawn 58,000 people the last five games to the Jordan Center. They're averaging 11.6 per game the last five games, and only two of the five were weekends. Yeah, I've had some people excited about what's going on. Now they're out of home games, unless, of course, they are seeded highly in the NIT if they are invited to go to that. So, that is... But it's interesting how that's played out. I mean, you know, I've always said that the only time you know you have a marketing problem is if you are winning and you're not drawing. Now, if you're winning and you're not drawing, you do have a marketing problem. Well, they've been winning and they've been drawing. They've had two crowds over 13. They've had another crowd over 11, another one over 10, and then on a bad weather night, they had over 8. The Maryland game. They had it drawn better for Maryland because Maryland brings I think Maryland brings the casual fan out pretty well. So, I mean, certain teams do. They're one of them. And that, but 58,000 they've drawn. Yeah, I mean, obviously wrestling, you know, went into the Jordan Center, drew almost 16,000. I mean, wrestling's been, they sell out Rec Hall all the time. They are very smart about which dual meet that they put into the Jordan Center. Because, I mean, I've talked to Kale about this. You know, I've talked to Kale about how important it is to make sure that when they go to the Jordan Center, that he wants it to be attractive and sold out. He's smart about that. He doesn't want to do anything to injure the brand in any way. Well, now you got basketball in there, and the feeling is the entire time that successful basketball may not sell out the Jordan Center, but successful basketball will draw people in. An exciting brand. Penn State is not a final score 36-33 team. Back then, yet last night was, what, the second time all year? No, it's maybe it's the third time all year. They've been under 70 points. Now, of course, it hurt them because they only scored 63 last night. Not having Mike Hurt, you lost your inside presence, you lost your rim protector. I mean, that was a big one to lose last night in terms of personnel. But exciting basketball, winning basketball, down the stretch basketball. I mean, the last five home games Penn State played, they drew 58,000 fans. That's an average of 11.6 per game. And again, three of the five were weeknights. Two Wednesdays and a Thursday. So I've always said that you have a marketing problem if you are successful and you are not drawing. Greatest marketing in the world is winning. I need to get a couple of other things straightened out, because last night was bizarre in some ways. I mean, why the officials never went to the monitor with a minute to go on an out-of-bounds play, I don't know. Why the clock stopped, I don't know.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.